So, hello and welcome to NDTI's Talking Inclusion podcast series. This is a special edition for Advocacy Awareness Week. My name is Gail Petty and I'm the Advocacy Lead at NDTI, and today I'm talking with Jackie Jobson. We are talking about equity and diversity within the advocacy community. Welcome, Jackie. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Gail, and thanks very much for inviting me to do this podcast. I'm Jackie Jobson. I've recently developed a consultancy service, Jackie Jobson Consultancy. Having been an advocacy director and managing of advocacy services for probably over 30 years, mainly in the northeast of England. I'm also an NDTI associate, working on advocacy, but also I've previously worked around care and treatment reviews as well.
Oh, thank you for joining us. What do you think are the main changes?
For me, advocacy in its essence is always focused on equality and justice and fairness. So in its core values, actually, the kind of golden thread of equity has run throughout advocacy, but I think it's manifested itself differently as the advocacy movement changed and we grew and we became more formal, and I guess there's been a risk lately of becoming more focused on issues and cases rather than holistically looking at the person in the round and looking at their, as well as looking at their rights in relation to a certain issue, looking at their rights and whether they're being treated fairly as a whole. So I think for me, that's where we are at the moment in terms of needing to reframe that. I think it's been an interesting couple of years, hasn't it, in terms of the pandemic, but also looking at kind of racism and all of the anti-racist conversations that have been going on, using that as a catalyst to really talk about the wider equity issues of minoritised people. I've really welcomed that. I started looking at equality and diversity when I worked at a mental health charity. And my own personal experience of being a mental health survivor, being from the LGBTQ community, I realised that there was some discrimination there for the LGBT community in mental health services. But then when I moved to a more generic advocacy service, I got involved in supporting local Black and minority ethnic community, as they were called then, services who wanted to have an advocacy project. That was really interesting in terms of developing a community-led advocacy project. So we were being led by, in Newcastle, there was a kind of real mixture of communities. And so they wanted somebody, an organisation who had advocacy skills who could help within all those communities. So that was a really interesting experience. And then later I was awarded a Churchill Fellowship and I went to Canada and Australia to look at LGBT advocacy and health inequalities. And so I've kind of worked on a range of different equality issues as part of my advocacy role. I think there's been lots of changes, and I think all for the better. We, you know, over time we've been moving in the right direction, given that over the last 10 years the government hasn't been particularly supportive of equality issues.
So Jackie, you talked about the conversation shifting over the last couple of years. What do you think, in terms of the advocacy community, what are the conversations you think we need to be having more of?
One of the things that I think is most important is that advocates are fairly comfortable about challenging injustice where they see it, or they should be. But I do think we need to look at within the advocacy community and within the services that we provide. We are institutions in ourselves, and as part of that, we can be part of the problem in terms of systemic and institutional discrimination. And even though, you know, we're charities and, you know, I'm sure we would all say we're good-hearted people, that kind of level of systemic discrimination still remains there. organisations really need to work together and really hold each other to account around that kind of systemic discrimination. Because how can we hold health and care services to account if we haven't got our own house in order? So I think that's why that's important, and to kind of really be thinking about the reason why we are involved in advocacy is to work to not only change things for the better for individuals, but also to change the system for the better and to make, you know, we've talked a lot about systemic advocacy and how, you know, we can, if we can make changes in policies and practice because of something that we've highlighted, then that has a bigger impact holding the rights of a single individual.
What are the things that advocacy providers or advocates, what are the things that they could be doing to improve practice and to be more inclusive?
Okay, that's quite a big question. So what can individuals be doing first? So I think the most important thing that individuals can do is to become informed, taking the opportunity to gain knowledge about diverse, minoritised communities, but also being able to have that nuance and flex about not stereotyping people within those communities, because we all have a mixture of identities, you know, often through intersectionality, but also we have choices about how far we follow our cultures. So there's a nuance that is about an individual person, but needs to be informed about having information about in general about those cultures and being able to be competent around those. So that's kind of what we call cultural competency. So having an understanding of dress, what people's practices are, whether there's any kind of issues that mainstream services would not be able to provide for people. But also I think having a real underpinning of that is an understanding of discrimination, really coming from a perspective of understanding how racism manifests itself, and homophobia and other types of discrimination, and seeing it from that perspective, looking at that person as an individual and what their needs are and what the barriers to having those needs met are. You know, and I guess that's a core advocacy skill, is it not? I think that can come with some training, but also we can do a lot. Basic research is also an advocacy skill. I think being informed, I think having courage to challenge is a core thing that individuals can do. And that might, as well as challenging kind of health and care organisations, that might be challenging within our advocacy community and services. Having an understanding of where you're coming from and how you walk through the world and what privileges you might have as a result of that can also help. If you've had experience of disadvantage, you're then more likely to be able to connect with somebody else who's had a different type of prejudice or disadvantage. So that works for advocates, but also it can make you more impassioned to be able to fight for justice for other people. And I would say be a champion within your organisation. The leaders in our organisations aren't always the people at the top of the hierarchy. So be a leader around equity and diversity. And use the law as well. And, you know, use the law around human rights, around equality, and use some of those statutory roles. Organisations, I think we need to get our act together. We've already started doing some of that work. Through the pandemic, we've been meeting as a leaders in advocacy network, and that's been really beneficial. And I think one of the core areas we've worked on is equity, diversity and inclusion. And that's brought us together, I think. And you've been part of that group, Gail, as well. So I think working on equity and really raising the bar in terms of what we want to achieve has been really important. We've outlined an equity, diversity and inclusion statement, you know, of where we want to be. We've had a look at what kind of actions we think organisations should be taking, and we're trying to hold each other to account around those in a kind of in a group setting. I think taking action is the most important thing. So planning, making sure that the organisation not only has a equality and diversity policy, but that they've got an action plan, which then talks about where their areas of strength are, where their areas of improvement are, and also having some accountability in that to making sure that that action is followed through and reported on to others, to people who use their services and other stakeholders. So the kind of things that I think need to happen in an action plan, I guess it'll depend on where the organisation starts from, looking at what your population is, what the need is, and not just making sure that you don't just provide advocacy to those who come to you, and going into communities and making sure that there's you're identifying any unmet need, kind of collect statistics.
That's one of the areas that we hear back from advocacy organisations or advocates as well about being a challenge and it sometimes being uncomfortable asking people questions about their heritage or their sexuality or their gender.
I guess what I would say is, yes, it can be uncomfortable if you're not used to doing it, but it's about practice, about dealing with it sensitively. And, you know, advocates are up for dealing with sensitive issues. One of the things that we did in the advocacy organisation that I worked with was we had a session. Actually, you know, nobody likes to do role play, but we had a session where we just practiced being on the phone, taking a referral and changing the emphasis from, I'm really sorry, I have to ask you some questions because our funders need this, to, it's really important to us to understand who you are and to make sure that we are providing the right service for you and for other people like you. So would you please help us by answering some of these questions, and just reframing that slightly. And also I talk about the right to be heard, and, you know, advocates are very keen on people's rights to be heard, and getting information off somebody about their experience and being counted is an important right. So just changing that emphasis can make all the difference in terms of an advocate's headspace, in terms of, the real work is getting to know this person, and on top of this, I've got some additional tasks which get in the way. One of the things that might happen is you might have some people who don't want to answer those questions, and that's their right as well. You know, as an advocate, if you get some pushback from that, then what you need to be thinking about, yes, this person has some privilege and doesn't understand that other people have privileges, but for every 99 people who you get some pushback, if when you're talking to one person, they come off that phone and they think, that is the first time I've been able to talk to somebody about my identity in that way, and that's a safe service, then it's been worth it.
Yeah, makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just kind of changing your kind of headspace around that. And also, I think the most important thing about gathering statistics is making sure something's done with them, because it is an intrusion into privacy if you gather personal information about somebody and it sits on a computer database and is never looked at. So it has to be real, kind of using that information to look at where your services are doing well and where there are gaps, and, you know, matching that with kind of some kind of external data of what you expect your population to be, so that you can say, why aren't we reaching a certain heritage group of minoritized people who we know are in our catchment area, but we don't seem to be having any referrals from.
Yeah.
Doing some work on that to then try and increase that. So yes, I think statistics, boring though it is, monitoring is really important. I think that I also think finding a way to really get the agenda of equity, diversity and inclusion as being really core part of what advocates do is important as well. So not just in their day-to-day practice with individuals, but thinking about that issue about systemic advocacy and whether they see, you know, often when you see a discrimination for one person, there might be like a huge issue, a real infringement of somebody's rights, or there might be some really small issues that are kind of reoccurring again and again. And it's important to raise those issues as well, because if they're affecting you know, several people, it probably means that it's a more kind of widespread issue. And bringing that up with the you know, the powers that be through your kind of commissioning arrangements, and through kind of more you know, whoever it is that you can talk to who has some power to change that, again, that's where we can make a big change as well.
Jackie, so Advocacy Awareness Week, our campaign theme this year is advocacy and action. And we've touched on lots of actions that advocates and that advocacy organisations can undertake. Have you got any kind of take home, sum it all up messages that...
Yes, I guess really thinking about equity and justice as being a core part of advocacy, not as an additional extra, and that going that extra mile in terms of really looking at that person in the round, and not just in terms of holding their rights under the Mental Health Act or the Mental Capacity Act, for example, but their whole rights in terms of human rights, and making sure that as an individual, you go that extra mile, and as an organisation, you create that culture to be able to go that extra mile and to challenge those issues where you can.
Are there other things, Jackie, that you think can support us within the advocacy community to stay accountable to each other, to stay accountable to the principles of equity, diversity, inclusion, and the people that we serve and the people that we support? Are there other things?
One of the main levers is within the advocacy organisations themselves is that issue about working together and driving up standards together. And, you know, that is the best way to do that. But also, I guess, the quality performance mark and standards is a really important way to kind of drive the standards up. And I know, Gail, that NDTI are looking at reviewing those standards and kind of making them more robust in the future, and kind of updating them in line with current best practice. So it'd be really important to make sure as those kind of revisions are coming through that they really support people and organisations to kind of really push themselves in terms of equity, diversity, inclusion, and kind of not be just kind of a policy driven, but that people will need to really demonstrate what action they're taking as well.
I think that's right, isn't it? And we've done all of that development work, and we're just at a point of refining what new standards and additional standards can look like before we roll out that refresh. But it's so important, isn't it, that we've got the standards there to help us on that kind of continued journey of development.
And I think if advocacy organisations use the QPM well, it's not just about going through hoops to be able to get a little crown on your website. It's about a time and some space for reflection, and really being able to look at what can we do better as an organisation, and having somebody external who has been able to kind of, who knows the standards well, but has also been able to look at other organisations and see some good practice. So you get a bit of a kind of an objective view about whether you're kind of delivering to those standards. I think that's really important. Yeah.
Jackie, thanks so much for talking to us, and thank you out there for listening. I hope you can join us again for our next podcast.